1 hour. That's a single hour of fundraising for the entire day. Together, we can raise the money needed to bring you the programs you value with as little interruption as possible. So join us Thursday morning at 7 and make your pledge then. And thanks.
Support for Focus 580 comes from the Infant Parent Institute. Celebrating its 20th anniversary in Champaign, the Infant Parent Institute is a private clinical practice and research institute dedicated to supporting the mental health of young children and their families. Information on the web at infant-parent.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. There are significant numbers of Americans who regularly ride bicycles. They do it for transportation. They do it for recreation. They do it for fitness. Sometimes they do it for all of those reasons. At the same time, I think that we know that for people who are, particularly people who are cyclists, I'm sure that they would agree that sometimes finding a place to ride safely can be a challenge. In fact, there have been surveys done that show that in many places, there are a lot of people who are unhappy about the ways that their towns are designed for cycling. And the question that we'll look at this morning is, are there some things that cities and towns can do to try to make their towns more bike-friendly, to make it easier for people who are already riding bicycles for transportation, or make it make the idea of riding a bicycle more appealing to people who maybe would consider that at least, but for some reason so far they're saying, well, I'm not sure that I'm right there yet. Our guest for this part of the show is Ed Barsotti. He is the executive director of the League of Illinois Bicyclists and has been since 2001. He serves as liaison between government and cyclists who are interested in trying to create better biking conditions in the state of Illinois. They do education for both motorists and cyclists. They promote the idea of bike-friendly roads and trails. He lives in Aurora. He bikes around 3,000 miles a year for both recreation and transportation. Also, I guess I should mention, he was a student at the University of Illinois. He's here visiting, the folks at the Mass Transit District have brought him here to town. He has spent some time already in a meeting that was essentially designed to get people to talk about these issues, and he's also going to be spending time talking with people from the two cities, Champaign and Urbana, and also from the University of Illinois. And the people here who live in Champaign and Urbana certainly know that there have, over the last couple of years now, been a lot of conversations, a lot of concern about transportation issues, particularly in the campus area, but also for the towns of Champaign-Urbana. Perhaps the big central question being, how is it that we manage to integrate all of the various forms of transportation and get everybody where they need to go and do that safely? This morning, we'll be talking about some and all of these things. And, of course, people who are listening have the opportunity to call in with questions. 333-9455, that's the number for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, and 800-222-9455 any place else around the state of Illinois. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Do you have some idea of how many people rely on bicycle as their major form of transportation?
Well, I don't really have the statistics for that, but I can tell you that 8% of households earn less than $20,000 a year. So there are a lot of people who, out of necessity, use a bicycle to get around town. There, of course, are people who are too young to drive and don't own a car for that reason. A lot of students, for example, don't have cars and rely on their bikes to get around campus and around Champaign and Urbana.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any sense, again, this is probably another one of these questions that's really difficult to answer, some sort of sense of how many people maybe would like to do more biking? That is, the idea of biking to work or biking to the store or maybe just biking for fun and for recreation. The more people would do it, but that their concerns about safety, where it is they're going to ride, how they're going to share the road with cars, really holds them back from doing it.
It does. That is a major concern. And polls have shown that there is a significant number of people who are willing to look at this option. It offers a lot of benefits, and you've mentioned a few of them, health benefits. It really is kind of a fountain of youth, I think. It provides you with the physical activity that really everybody needs every day. It's a moderate form of exercise that you can do throughout your lifetime. And it does provide benefits to the environment and as well as traffic congestion in a particular town. Hmm. So it is something that people have considered, but often there are concerns. And one concern is that there really has not been a lot of training for people on how to bicycle safely on the roadways around town. Typically, when you're a kid, you'll perhaps go to a bike rodeo, and at a bike rodeo, you'll maybe do an obstacle course. You'll learn about riding on the right side of the road. You'll learn about how to use a helmet correctly and so on. But in terms of what to actually do on the roadway, what are some of the statistics of perhaps getting hit from behind? What are some of the accident, common accidents that occur? Those things really people do not have a good grasp of, and I think those factors are holding some people back.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure that we'll hear from people on both sides of this divide because motorists and cyclists have gripes, and I think in some cases justified gripes about each other. Let me just start with the cyclists, and I think that the big complaint, I'm sure, from a lot of motorists is that cyclists, when they're riding on the road, they're considered a vehicle, and they're supposed to obey the rules of the road, all of the same rules that people are driving cars are supposed to obey. So that means going the right way on one-way streets. That means stopping at stop signs and stoplights. That means signaling. That means all of the things that motorists are supposed to do. And I'm sure that probably the big complaint about cyclists is they don't do that.
No, you're absolutely right. A lot of cyclists feel that by riding a bike, it entitles you to a sense of freedom and you can do whatever you really want to out there. But the fact is that messes things up for people who mm-hmm. bike in the correct fashion. You really are a vehicle out there. And in order to keep the transportation system working, in order to have cars and bikes coexist correctly, you really need to follow the rules that cars follow. Mm-hmm. For example, yielding the right of way at the appropriate moment, following the stop signs, and all the laws that are really out there for our safety.
Yeah. Well, there seems to be no really good place if what you're trying to do is educate cyclists.
Yes.
There seems to be really no good place to do that. At least you can do that with drivers because you have to take a test to get your license and you may have driver's education in school. So at least somebody at some point is saying, okay, here are the rules and here's what you have to follow. And, of course, there always is the possibility that you're going to get a ticket if you break the rules. It seems as far as cyclists are concerned, it's hard to find some place, first of all, to do that education. And then, the chances, I'm sure there are places where it happens, but the chances of a cyclist getting a ticket for breaking the rules, probably pretty low.
Yeah, it's actually a dream of mine that bicyclist education becomes part of a school curriculum. Mm-hmm. I would like to see that perhaps in PE classes where we learn a bunch of other games and skills and so on. But that provides, I think, a great opportunity, and some states are starting to pick up upon this. I think from what I've heard from PE teacher friends of mine, there's somewhat of a movement toward life skills and activity throughout your lifetime, learning things that you can do throughout your lifetime as part of PE. And I think bicycling fits in perfectly with that. So, again, my hope is that eventually that we'll have bicyclist training for kids, more than just the bike rodeos, train them on how to coexist safely on the roadways. I think PE classes would be a good place for that. Regarding the issue of ticketing, our organization has a grant from IDOT to do training of police to help them with enforcement issues, both for motorists and for cyclists on regarding bicycles. And what we would like to see, and we're encouraging motorists to do, is to educate cyclists if they see them doing something wrong, to stop them and say, here's what you're doing wrong. This is one of the leading causes of accidents for bikes and cars. It's to your benefit to learn to do this better and to discontinue that and to follow the rules of the road.
So what are some of the leading causes of accidents for bikes and cars that you can really trace to something that cyclists are doing?
Well, it turns out that the cyclists are the major reason for an accident, mostly for kids. For adults, it turns out that it's a motorist error that leads to most of the accidents. For kids, for example, the common things that occur include just ignoring stop signs and cruising through. Another one is riding out of the driveway. And another one is if they're biking along a roadway, suddenly they decide they want to turn left and they don't look back, swerve across the lane, and get hit by a motorist who's behind. So that covers maybe 80% of the accidents that occur between a child cyclist and a motorist. In terms of adults, when you look at adult cyclists, again, most of the accidents come from motorist error. And some of the things that occur include motorists turning left at an intersection and not yielding the right-of-way to a cyclist who's coming from the other direction. Another one is perhaps a motorist turning right and cutting off a cyclist who's going straight. The motorist may accelerate, go beyond a cyclist who's in the same lane, and then turn right in front of them to cut them off. And then finally, another one is when a motorist might be coming out of a driveway and not looking at sidewalks to see perhaps if a cyclist is on the sidewalk, or not even looking in the roadway and hitting a cyclist in that fashion. So those are the major sources of accidents regarding adult cyclists. One that is fairly rare, and I know has occurred recently in this community, unfortunately, was one where a cyclist was hit from behind. And that is a major, major fear by a lot of people when it comes to riding on the road. But it turns out that unfortunate incident was fairly rare in terms of what happens in the crash statistics. Typically, getting hit from behind does not happen too frequently. When it does happen, usually it involves things such as riding at night without lights, if you're the cyclist. There might be alcohol impairment. Often it might be on a rural road. But the unfortunate incident which occurred here in town last month is fairly rare. So, again, there are errors that typically occur both on the cyclist end and the motorist end, and it's our goal to try to educate both groups to look for these things and avoid them.
Yeah. Well, I think that here we certainly have a case where, as I said before, that motorists and cyclists each have complaints about the other.
Yes.
That are certainly justified, and mm-hmm. that is that the motorists complain that the cyclists don't obey the rules, and the cyclists complain that the motorists give them no respect. And you have cyclists and it's, I think, sort of compounded by the problem that it feels, if you're out there driving right where the cars are, it doesn't feel good. So what you do is you're trying to confine yourself into this tiny little space sort of between where the cars are and where the curb is.
Yeah.
And that doesn't really give you much room. And if you don't have a specifically dedicated bike lane, and there are some places that do, then, you know, it's sort of really hard, I think, for a cyclist to know, well, where am I supposed to be? And where am I going to be safe? And, will the drivers acknowledge that I have some right to be there?
Right. Well, that also is an issue. And before I'll go into the details of where you should position yourself on the roadway, I'll mention that we just finished a video that has been sent to drivers' education programs throughout the state, both high school driver's ed and also private driving schools. That video has also been sent to police. And what it does is it tries to let motorists know about these common errors that occur. It lets motorists know about cyclists standing on the roadway and how they're entitled to be there and how you should look for them. So that is something that we hope will start making a dent in education regarding motorists. In terms of where you should be on a roadway when you bike, the mantra that seems to work is that cyclists fare best when they act and are treated like motor vehicle drivers. And that includes a number of things. That includes riding predictably, yielding when you're supposed to, following the right-of-way laws. And on the roadway itself, if you're in the situation that you've described of hugging the white line, hugging the curb line, mm-hmm. that's a situation where you really don't have much maneuvering room. In that situation, perhaps the motorist will try to squeeze by you within the same lane. And if the lane is the standard width of maybe 12 feet or so, there might not be enough room for the motorist to pass you or miss you by at least 3 feet. That's the distance you want to try to have as a minimum. So what a cyclist should do in such a situation to give himself maneuvering room if there's an obstacle ahead is to bike out perhaps 18 inches or so from that curb line and force the passing situation. And typically motorists will have to wait a few seconds to pass the cyclist, and that may be irritating to them. But it really is safer for everyone involved. When there are bike lanes or dedicated space in the roadway, then you automatically have built in the space that the cyclists need. If you have a 14-foot lane called a wide outside curb lane, that provides enough space for the cyclist to not hug the white line, be out a little bit, and still provides enough room for the motorist to pass the cyclist by at least 3 feet.
Yeah.
So it's a safer situation all around. In some of our advocacy work that we do in towns around the state, we try to encourage that sort of road construction.
Yeah, that I suppose is the best of all possible worlds, that you have the road is wide enough so that you have lanes for cars, you have lanes for bicyclists. And then as a pedestrian, I'd say, and it would also be nice to have a sidewalk and not have to share it with people on bikes. That's one of my big gripes as someone who walks, people riding their bikes on the sidewalk. And I'm sympathetic because it can be dangerous out there with the cars.
Yeah.
But I also sort of feel like, hey, sidewalks for me.
Right.
You're a vehicle. Get out of here.
Right. Typically, when you get in the middle of town where you have a lot of pedestrian activity, riding on the sidewalk is a bad idea for cyclists. You do have conflicts with pedestrians, but also at all the intersections, at all the side streets, at all the driveways, at all the commercial entrances, you're in a position where motorists don't see you and they're not expecting you. They might be expecting pedestrians who are moving much slower, but you as a cyclist on a sidewalk are traveling faster. And in every sort of turning situation at these intersections, a motorist is looking in a place where someone on a sidewalk is not. So you put yourself more at risk. So what we try to encourage is within the areas where you'll see a lot of pedestrians on the sidewalks to build your road, build your town so that you have bike lanes, dedicated space on the roadways that work better for everyone. Once you get out further out into the outside parts of town where the roads are faster, 45 miles an hour, and you don't have many intersections crossing the road or crossing the sidewalk, those are places where perhaps a trail alongside of the road makes more sense, and it works better for everyone. You don't have as much pedestrian activity out there. You don't have as many intersections to contend with. So there are different ways for a town to become bike-friendly, and in some cases where you have a lot of pedestrian activity, you would like to look at on-road as an option.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Ed Barsotti. He's the executive director of the League of Illinois Bicyclists, and we're talking about bicycle safety and also some of the things that communities can do to make their towns more bike-friendly. You have questions, you can call us. We have a couple of people here ready to go. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. First caller here is in Rantoul and line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah.
I appreciate your program. I'm 57 years old. I ride a bicycle when I had my driver's, after I had my driver's license, I rode my bicycle until age 21 through college. And frequently I'd ride it 13.7 miles to work when I went to work. I'm now 57, and I ride it quite frequently. I've taken both Motorcycle Safety Foundation courses, the beginning and experience ones, and I've done a lot of motorcycling. I'm currently doing a lot of bicycle riding. When I lived in Champaign-Urbana, bicycle riders are very discourteous down there. And I, for one, always stopped at stop signs. I always went with the traffic. In the younger years, I could maintain 35 miles an hour all the way down University Avenue from one end of town to another. Really can't do that now. But I believe in the helmet. I believe in lots of reflective stickers on my bike. I'd be riding down the road, and someone will yell at me, "Get on the sidewalk! Get on the sidewalk!" You know, and sometimes the sidewalk's got too much broken glass. But I make it a point to stop at stop signs. Fastidiously, whether I'm driving a car, a motorcycle, or my bicycle, at least 1 foot hits the ground. My biggest beef right now is I come to a stoplight, and they got these inductive coils in my bicycle. I got aluminum one and a Reynolds 531 one, and I can't activate those switching like a car does. And so if it's in the evening, I just grab a bike, get off, and pedal or walk it to the side, and then cross over. I essentially I'm walking over to the left and running the red light, but usually it's at nighttime when I can't switch the lights. But people are not trained properly. I see people riding the wrong way on the bikes, usually kids. Usually when I'm in Champaign-Urbana, if I'm going to make a right turn in a car, I hug the right curb very much when I come to a stoplight or a sign, because when I see a bicyclist coming up along the curb on the road, I know that jerk is going to jump out in front of me, and I'm going to make a right turn, and I'm going to cut him off, and I don't want to do that. So what I do is I come right over, knowing that I'm a bicycle rider myself and a motorcyclist. I keep him behind me, let him know that I'm going to make a right turn. It's not that I'm trying to signal him that, hey, I'm going to make a right turn, because too many times if I don't do it, that jerk is going to jump right out in front of me, and before I realize it, I'm going to have to come to a screeching halt. I mean, I believe in education.
Yeah, well, Connor certainly raises a lot of good points. Yeah. Both, you know, I think he's both illustrates the frustration of people in cars and illustrates, what's a more responsible kind of way of being a cyclist. You know, both those things. You want to talk about some of those things?
Sure. I'll address a couple of those. The latest point about moving over into the right part of the lane when you're a motorist who's turning right, that's a good tip. I'd never heard that one before, but it makes complete sense. You want to avoid what's called the right hook, where the right turning motorist hits the cyclist who is going straight, which is on the right of him. Mm-hmm. As a cyclist, what you may want to do in that situation as you approach the intersection is to veer out further away from the curb to prevent from being cut off and to give the message to the motorist that you're going straight through that intersection. But I'd never thought about the other way of a motorist moving over a little further and right into the lane to prevent the cyclist from squeezing by on his right. So that's a good tip. Regarding the traffic loops and not being able to activate the lights, that's something we work with municipalities, and we tell them that there are ways where you can put a pavement marking to show cyclists where to go to trigger the stoplight. There's nothing more frustrating than coming up as a cyclist to a stoplight, doing what you're supposed to do of trying to trigger the light so that you can go on a green, and sitting there for minutes and minutes because the signal's not turning green. So as a cyclist, what you can do is actually go on the edge of the saw cut of the inductive loop and actually lean your bike over a bit, and that might help. I would like to mention on that subject for motorists, often motorists, when they see cyclists on a road and they're at a red light behind a cyclist, will be way, way back of the cyclist thinking that's a safer thing to do. What you want to do as a as a motorist is to creep up a little closer to the bicycle, because the bicycle might not be tripping that stoplight. So you as a motorist would also be sitting there for minutes waiting for the stoplight to turn. You made a good point about stopping. I'm glad that you're stopping at all the stop signs. As a bicycle advocate, I appreciate that. I do try to encourage other cyclists to follow all the rules, because when they don't, it tends to mess things up for everyone. It gets motorists angry at cyclists, and it just makes for a bad situation. One time I heard a story about Kendall County, where some cyclists were riding side by side, two abreast, in a situation where the motorist behind could not pass them. And the motorist, the law says that in that situation where you're impeding traffic, that cyclists should single file instead of going side by side. But they didn't in that situation. The motorist was stuck for a very long time. So the motorist called up the sheriff and was pretty angry about this. And I learned about it afterwards because that motorist was Speaker Dennis Hastert. And we are actually in Washington at that time, working on the federal transportation bill, trying to make it as bike-friendly as possible. So, you know, the things that cyclists do wrong out there that perturb motorists do have a negative impact. And as cycling advocates, we would like to encourage proper behavior by both cyclist and motorist. Sharing the road is a two-way street, and a little courtesy goes a long way.
Yeah, we're already at our midpoint. I want to thank the last caller and get on some others because the lines indeed are full. Also, I'd like to introduce again our guest, Ed Barsotti. He is the executive director of the League of Illinois Bicyclists, has been since 2001. In his role leading the statewide bike advocacy organization, he serves as liaison between government and cyclists, everybody interested in better conditions for bikes in the state of Illinois, and they are interested in and do education for motorists and for cyclists. They also work to promote the building of bike trails and bike-friendly roads, and they work with community planners around the state to try to see what they can do to make their communities more bike-friendly. And that's part of the reason that he's here in Champaign-Urbana, is to spend time meeting with officials from the cities, from the university, and from local people in transportation, and also, I guess, anybody who is really interested. And I'm sure that includes a lot of cyclists, people who bike and want to be safe. Questions, comments are certainly welcome. We have a lot of folks here, so we'll get right back to the phones, starting with someone on our toll-free line over in Bloomington, Indiana. Line four, right here. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'm an adult bicycle rider. About times when motorists don't see bicyclists, I find an especially dangerous situation is when I'm riding, staying as far to the right as I can, but I'm riding along a line of parked cars, and I'm approaching an intersection. A motorist who is about to cross that intersection in front of me, because of all the parked cars, now I'm riding along the parked cars, and he cannot see me on my bicycle until he has actually entered that intersection. And anyway, I think motorists don't see what they're not looking for, and motorists are not looking for bicycles. He's looking for other cars, and he's not looking for a bicycle, and maybe that's why he doesn't see me, because actually when I'm riding my bicycle, I'm taller than the cars. He could see me if he looked hard. What I do, if there are no other cars near me in my lane, I will pull out into the center. So a car approaching from a crossing intersection, I'm no longer hidden by the parked cars, and I'm in plain sight. I'm not interfering with any traffic because there's no traffic around me. If there are other cars approaching that intersection, he'll see the cars. Those cars will save me. He doesn't have to see me. If there are other cars approaching that intersection, if he sees the cars, he's going to stop anyway. But if there aren't any cars, I pull out into the middle of the lane so that he can give me something. It gives him something conspicuous to see.
Well, you got one of them?
Yeah, that does make sense. That's a good way to go. Even when there are cars around, I think it does make a little sense to edge out further from the edge, from the parked cars, so that you give the indication to motorists behind you that you're going to be going straight through that intersection.
Yeah.
But when there are no other cars around, going into the middle does sound like a very good way to be more visible. And visibility is a key. Couple of other things I want to mention about this. Cyclists often will ride along a street that has parked cars, and what you want to avoid, and I'm sure you probably do from your experience, is to go within 3 feet or so of the parked car, because often those parked cars may open their door when you don't expect it.
Yes, and, indeed.
Yeah, something called getting doored.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Hopefully that hasn't happened to you.
Almost.
Okay. So that's something you want to try to avoid by going out a little away from the parked cars. Also, I'll mention that people may wonder why cyclists wear some of the funny clothing that they do. I don't know what you wear as you go around Bloomington, Indiana, but often cyclists will have bright jerseys, very gaudy-looking things that you wouldn't wear in public, you wouldn't go to the restaurant with, but there's a reason for it, and that's for visibility. The brighter colors tend to make you more visible, so even in the daytime, it makes sense to be nice and visible, be bright. Neon-colored clothing will make it so that cyclists will see you better. At nighttime, the law states that you have to have bike lights, and you should definitely have that for your safety. Makes sense to wear light clothing at night as well. So you are absolutely correct that motorists will not see cyclists in a lot of situations. In situations where cycling is fairly rare and there's not a lot of bikes out there, they're definitely not looking for bikes. In places, for example, communities like university towns, there might be a lot more bike traffic. And it's been shown that when there is more bike traffic, motorists tend to see cyclists a lot more often. They expect cyclists more often, and that improves the safety. So, stick with what you're doing, wear the bright clothes, and make sure that you're seen. Be defensive out there, too.
Thank you.
All right. We'll talk next with somebody on a cell phone. They're traveling on I-57. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi, I'd like to make a suggestion from a different point of view. I've lived in the Champaign-Urbana area for 30 years, and I've had three friends on bicycles struck and killed. So I'm kind of familiar with that on a very personal level.
Sorry to hear that.
I also, when I was very young and I was had a motor scooter, I was doored. And that was because I was a passenger and my friend thought, well, let's just sneak up on the traffic and get closer to the light. And someone opened up the door into traffic. But here's the two points I want to raise. Campus Town, if there's more attention paid to the students, it's because we basically expect the students to be completely irresponsible, to do what they want, when they think they can get away with it. And so we're more vigilant. In Cambridge, England, actually, the cars will wave at the bicyclists. That's their attitude towards it. But the real issue I want to raise here is this: two of them. One, the use of places for people to ride their bicycles on sidewalks, and when they stop, do the bicyclists go onto the street? What are they supposed to do? When are they on sidewalks? When are they not? And I think it's extremely confusing the way they put in bicycle paths in Campus Town, leaving everybody unclear as to what they're supposed to be doing. Now, my biggest complaint is this, and it's the police. And you said that bicyclists have to obey the traffic laws. They are considered vehicles. And there is almost no ticketing going on with bicyclists who cross lights when there's red and do all those violations. And if students and at least adults realize this was going to go on their traffic record and this would affect their car insurance and it would affect their ability to even drive a car, then I think you'd see a much greater sense of, I don't want to say responsibility, but they would be much more careful. And I think the police in Champaign-Urbana are incredibly negligent in watching bicyclists just break the laws all over Campus Town. And not only that, but the people who are on police patrol violate those laws themselves at their convenience. And I would like to see much more law reinforcement on bicyclists to get them to behave more responsibly. So that's with the comment that I wanted to make.
All right. Thank you. Let's get some response.
Okay. I fully agree with you on that, on the ticketing issue and the police perhaps watching cyclists and not giving them tickets. It turns out last week we debuted a police enforcement training up in Northbrook, and we'll be bringing it around the state, hopefully to Champaign-Urbana as well. But police often... sometimes a reason for not giving a ticket to a cyclist may be that this seems like such a minor infraction. Gee, you know, there's better things that we should be doing with our time and so on. And one of the pitches we tried to make in that training is that what you're doing is you by stopping that cyclist, by stopping that pedestrian, is you're educating them on something that they're doing wrong. And that's something in the future, if that cyclist continues doing that behavior, maybe something that leads to an accident. So the pitch that we're trying to make is that, you know, don't just ignore cyclists doing the wrong thing. You're actually eventually helping them out by letting them know what they're doing wrong. Hopefully that will save their life in the future. You also mentioned about the campus bike paths and, how it's discontinuous perhaps and when you ride on the roads and when you don't and so on. It's true that the campus system was built a very long time ago, and that was before there was a lot of expertise in this area, before there were standards that were developed. And it's very possible that if you start it with a clean slate now, you do things a lot differently. There are campus areas around the country where bike lanes are put in, on-street bike lanes that are dedicated space for bikes. Those are on each side of the road. Bicyclists in bike lanes are traveling with the flow of traffic, and because of that, there's a lot more visibility. They're within motorist viewpoints when they turn at intersections, and it tends to work all around. It increases cyclist participation, and it improves safety rates as well. So It's a matter of retrofitting and what can be done to try to improve some of the situations around campus. Unfortunately, we do not have a clean slate to start with, but I'm sure if we did start off from a clean slate, some of these newer techniques that have been developed over the past two decades can be implemented. So, I'm sorry.
You just, pardon me for jumping in, but I just, that I think is precisely the situation, one of the big situations that we do have here, and that there are certain points on the campus where we have buses and cars and bicyclists and pedestrians all sort of coming together all in one spot. We have these various choke points where everybody is coming together, and I think that it is very unclear. It can be very unclear to everybody what it is they're supposed to do here. Mm-hmm. And I wonder whether there's some way that you can mark things or set things up, particular kinds of signage or something that you can do in the way of retrofitting, if you're not being able to start from the very beginning, to at least make it more clear to everybody when they come to this point, when they ask themselves, okay, what am I supposed to do here?
Right. Well, let's look at the example of Green Street and Wright Street. I'm sure that's a very popular choke point, and you nodded your head, so I know that is. Yes. It was a choke point when I was a student, long, long time ago. In that sort of a situation, consider the buses that are turning right from northbound right onto eastbound Green Street.
Right. Okay.
In that situation, cyclists who are on the sidewalk may conflict with the turning buses turning right. What an approach that could be taken is to try to encourage on-road use in a way that is safe and reduces the intersection conflicts. For example, what you can do is to the left of the right turn lane, you can put in a pavement marking that exists. It's a little picture of a bicycle with a couple of arrows over it. It's called a chero. You can put that there to the left of the right turn lane. And that shows cyclists where they should position themselves in the roadway when they want to go straight right there. Before the intersection, as they approach the intersection, dotted lines could be put in to show kind of a merge area where cyclists should move over, get away from that right turn lane, so that they can go straight ahead without conflicting with the right turning bus. That is one example of pavement markings that could be done to try to encourage correct bicyclist behavior. We recognize, of course, that a lot of cyclists will not feel comfortable in that situation, but the best you can do is to encourage the right use. You want to show them where they should be that will provide the most safety. Surely there will be people who still want to use the sidewalk, and there will be conflicts there. They'll have to be defensive. But you want to encourage the right type of behavior.
I have several callers here. We'll try to get as many as we can. We have about 10 minutes left. Our guest is Ed Barsotti. He's the executive director of the League of Illinois Bicyclists. Next up, we have someone in Champaign County, I believe. That's line number one.
Hi.
Yes.
I wanted to talk about, actually getting people commuting on bikes. And the thing that I see as necessary is intermodal transportation. Now, the last thing the MTD did locally was have the racks on the front that hold two bikes, but that's good, but it's limited. It slows it down. And there was a proposal for a tram that would be a ground level tram, which would be good for disabled people too. But there's a lot of opposition to that. I mean, I attended Tim Johnson's award for voting for CAFE standards and said it was entirely myopic to give him an award for getting a pass to vote on something now and again when we know it's not going to pass the whole House, when he's vehemently opposed. And I asked him about mass transit. I specifically mentioned the tram, so I suppose he could say, well, he's in favor of other kinds of mass transit. But he was absolutely went apoplectic about how opposed he was to a tram and mass transit solutions in general. So it just seems we need to talk about that was a little political thing there. But anyway, we need to talk about what allows people to use a bicycle in inclement weather, making their options available so that they can ride and not worry about what the weather is going to be on their return commute, et cetera, et cetera. And like I say, it would be good for a lot of other people as well. So I wanted you to talk about those kind of policies. I mean, I've seen 20 years ago in Amsterdam signal systems that were separate for the bike lanes, but obviously that's... That's not something that's going to happen here anytime soon, but Anyway, I'll just hang off.
Let's do that. Go ahead and talk about that.
Okay. In terms of the racks on the buses that MTD has, it sounds like they're drowning in their success in that regard. And in fact, transit agencies around the country have seen that the multimodal aspect of allowing bikes on the buses or on trains, if you have a commuter rail system, have been successful and have allowed the extent of that transit system to be wider. So it has worked for transit agencies. And I honestly don't know anything about the trams or that situation there, but I think any opportunity where multimodal use, allowing bikes to use that should it be raining in the afternoon after they've bike commuted in the morning, I think that makes perfect sense and should be part of the plans. I think CU, Mass Transit District, does have those issues in mind very well, and hopefully anything that comes along in the future would include such provisions. Congressman Tim Johnson, he actually has been a proponent quite a bit on this subject. In fact, a few years ago, I did a bike ride here in Urbana with him. It was a terrible weather day. It was 40 degrees, rainy, and very windy, and I said, hey, if you want to back out of this, fine, but he went ahead and did it anyway. He has been a champion of something called Safe Routes to School, which is a new federal program. It has funding for states and for local agencies to try to improve the routes to school for kids from kindergarten through eighth grade, sidewalk retrofits, safer to cross roadways, and so on. So that's something that I hope that CU will take advantage of in the coming years. And then finally, I'll mention that Urbana is in the process of thinking about doing a bike plan. They have money budgeted to do a bicycle plan to implement some of these infrastructure changes around town. So it's a very positive step forward taken by Urbana, and they've even established a bicycle and pedestrian advisory committee to help guide some of these changes in town. So kudos to them.
All right. Let's go to Champaign. This is line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to thank you for this show. It's really informative, and I've enjoyed listening to it. I'm an adult bicyclist as well as a pedestrian, and one of the hazards that hasn't been mentioned at all yet is the hazard of people driving while talking on their cell phones. Many times I've been cut off in both situations as a bicyclist and a pedestrian by people that just were totally inattentive and not paying attention to what they were doing.
That's definitely a problem, and I know it was a major factor in what happened last month here in Urbana, unfortunately. It seems like the issue of cell phone use is starting to get some recognition. I believe a state law might have been passed last year in the state legislature regarding cell phone use by very young drivers, 16 through 18, if I remember right. It's something that, with the new technology of cell phones and its prevalent use, will probably get more attention. There have been studies out there that have shown that when you're on a cell phone, when you're driving, that you will be inattentive. It's almost like you're driving while you're drunk. So I think that this is an issue that not only from a bicycling perspective, but also pedestrians and other motorists will be looked at more carefully. It is a problem that is leading to more inattention by drivers, and I think there will be a rising tide to make sure that drivers are not as distracted.
I certainly hope so. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go to another Champaign caller. I think this is line number three. Hello.
Yeah, you mentioned that you're from the Aurora area. I'm just wondering how the development of the I used to live in the Lenox, the bike and walk trail that I guess was out of Chicago Heights and was running west. Well, how's the development of that?
What you're mentioning is called the Old Plank Road Trail, and I'll just mention this for a bit. It's a 20-mile trail in the south suburbs. And ironically, when that was constructed in the mid-90s, if I remember my dates right, there was a lot of opposition by people for this separate trail. It was an old converted railroad line. There was a lot of opposition by neighbors who believed that bringing that to their community would bring crime, it would lower property values, and so on. Well, it turns out that nationally, and there are studies that show this, that these fears are unfounded, that this does not occur. Typically, trails that are used by the public are safe places in town. They're among the safer places in town. And also, property values tend to increase. Having these in your town will make your town a more attractive place
for families, for business location, and so on. So that trail that you mentioned had a lot of initial opposition. New Lenox itself was against it originally, but when they found how popular it was and what an asset it was for their community, they were first up in line to ask for more and ask for extensions. In fact, they have since done their own bicycle plan, like Urbana is starting to do right now.
And how far, how many miles there? You know, I know it's through Joliet, and is it extended much further beyond that now at this point or not?
I think they recently won funding to extend to a little closer to downtown Joliet, at which point there are on-street routes, and then you can pick up something called the I&M Canal Trail. Between that and the Hennepin Canal Trail, you can almost make your way out to the Quad Cities with a 15-mile gap in the middle. So there's actually almost a cross-state trail that is part of the American Discovery Trail system.
Okay, thank you.
All right, to the toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a group of bicycle riders in this area who have gotten DUIs, and they're not allowed to drive a car. And my experience with being an automobile driver is that they're not very well informed about riding a bicycle. And I don't know, you know, I'm sure that once their license is taken away by the judge or whatever, they're not handed anything about bicycle safety. And the only way they can get around in these small towns and rural areas is riding a bike. And, maybe some information could go to these people or a little training. And I want to relate an experience that I had. I was riding with some other people coming home on kind of a long trip, day trip, west of Effingham on a state highway, and it was midnight. And we came upon two fellows on bikes. One of them had a reflector, and the other one didn't. They were in our lane. And if there had been any other car there, I don't think we would have seen them when we managed to get around them. I mean, midnight. It was terrible. And I almost never slept all night. We called the sheriff when we could and let him know. And I called the next day and was told, well, they got to where they needed to go. And I thought, this is scary to come upon somebody like that in the middle of the night. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up.
Okay. Well,
to your first point about people getting DUIs and using their bikes by necessity, that is definitely an audience that's out there, and I'm glad you made that comment. It's something that I'd like to follow up with, especially since we're involved with police training, of providing some sort of bike safety for people like that who are newly forced into a situation of having to use their bike to get around town. The situation you mentioned regarding coming across the cyclist, that's very, very scary for everyone involved. I think that training cyclists that, hey, you are not going to be seen in that sort of situation, that's the kind of situation where you could be hit from behind very easily. Make sure you're as visible as possible. One little reflector is not going to do the job. Add some retro-reflective clothing, add some light clothing, have a backlight. There's lots of things you can do there. So that's, another, besides bike safety, that might be another thing that we bring up with the court system and with the judicial system. In terms of cyclist riding home at night, again, there's lots of situations where that is the only mode of transportation that they have. What we're seeing a lot more is a lot of the traffic deaths are perhaps workers at restaurants or others who bike home at night on busy roads on the outskirts of towns where you see a lot of the restaurants, a lot of the commercial development, and they're riding on arterial roads where there really is nowhere for them to ride except in the lane in a fairly dangerous situation. We as advocates are trying to ask towns to think about these people and make sure that there is space for them, that you plan for them. They're going to be there to some extent. So for everyone's benefit, for their safety, and for motorists who may have to go through the nightmare of hitting someone or having a close call, all of this can be avoided if we're conscious of the fact that there are people out there who are using their bikes either by necessity or because they choose to for whatever reason. And if we plan our towns in that way, I think we're all better off.
We are at the point here we're going to have to stop because we've used our time, and I'm sorry, we have a couple of people we cannot take. By the way, I guess I should mention that the League of Illinois Bicyclists does indeed have a website, and there's information on bike safety for adults, for kids, and the other kinds of things you're interested in. So if people want to go to www.bikelib, that's right, BIKELIB.org, they can find out more about some of these issues. Any last sort of thought that you'd like to leave with folks?
Well, I guess I want to thank you for this opportunity today. One thing that I'm just sad about is that there's not much education for motorists and not much education for bicyclists. I see that bicycling is part of many solutions that we face in our country, everything from parking at campus to traffic congestion to dirty air to health problems and so on. And I see it as part of the solution to many things. So I think that in order to make this a viable option for people, we need to do a better job of education of both cyclists, of motorists. We need to share the road, simple courtesy, everybody follow the same rules that are out there.
All right. Ed Brasati, he's Executive Director of the League of Illinois Bicyclists. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Our program, Focus 580, is made possible in part by a grant from RE/MAX Realty Associates, currently handling over 30% of the real estate sales transactions in Champaign County. Information at 352-5700. RE/MAX encourages you to join them in supporting public broadcasting. We are broadcasting from Campbell Hall for our telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of Alice and Robert Campbell. A little bit later today, Celeste Quinn will be talking with Karen DeYoung. She's a journalist. She works for the Washington Post. She is the author of the new biography, Soldier, The Life of Colin Powell. Despite harboring serious doubts about the advisability of a war with Iraq, Secretary of State Colin Powell carried the Bush administration's case against Iraq to the United Nations in February of 2003. Powell never advised the administration against the invasion. We'll be talking about some big questions here, including why he didn't and to what extent he did voice his concerns. All of that in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine. Celeste Quinn is the host. Coming up in the next hour of this show, we'll be talking about the continuing nuclear crisis with North Korea. Our guest will be Thomas Hubbard. He's the former ambassador from the United States to South Korea. He'll be joining us by phone in a little bit. First, though, we'll break for an update on the markets and news, so stay tuned.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
And with this update on the markets, I'm Jay Pierce. It's a minute before 11 o'clock, and December wheat on the Kansas City Exchange is trading down 5 cents at 525.5. December wheat on the Chicago Board of Trade at 514, down 17. March at 522, down 15.5 right now. December corn at 315, down 6. March at 325, down 4.25. The May contract at 330, down 5.75. July corn at 334.5, down 4.5. November soybeans, 599, down 1.5.